Technology's great when it works. Oop. That helps when I don't turn it off. All right, there we go. All right, well, I don't know where everybody is, but I know there is some traffic on 146, because God knows I got stuck in it again. Thank you. I know it's a great point. All right. So we just got a little bit more to cover, and then our introduction into government will be complete, and then we'll move on to a little history involving federalism. All right. What? At its core, is government supposed to do? Well, it depends. It depends on the jurisdiction. Because as we've said, and when we've come to see, we don't live in a country. We live in a federalist union of 50 sovereign states, and the states themselves are made up of municipalities. So we actually have levels of government. So ultimately, what the government should be doing depends upon what level of government you're talking about, which kind of makes sense. On a national level, if you read the U.S. Constitution, it lays it out pretty clearly. What the national government's supposed to do is essentially ensure the nation's survival. They are supposed to defend the people from threats. Not done yet, but thank you. I appreciate that. They're supposed to defend from threats, both external and internal. The government in D.C. has an obligation to protect us from invasions. Also terrorism. Again, external, internal. Why? Because it's about we the people. The government is also supposed to prevent us from killing one another. It's supposed to somehow juggle the interests of 350 million people to prevent disorder and chaos, and God forbid even civil war. Which, by the way, we've already had one of. And I'll tell you, I hope and pray we never have another one. Did you know that one out of every 50 men that were alive in the United States died in our Civil War? Yes, that was a good point. But we don't want to have that happen again. So the job of our national government is supposed to juggle all these things to essentially allow us as individuals to do our own thing. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Now, on a state and local level, in theory, the government should have more contact. Like, we should never be interacting with Washington, D.C. There should never be an instance when you have contact with Washington, D.C. beyond paying your income taxes. Because if you have contact with Washington, D.C., that means you did something really, really, really wrong. But on a state level, state government provides laws, criminal laws, to protect us from the baddies. They make sure if you engage in contracts that your rights are protected. They provide local roads. They provide schools. They provide playgrounds. And at the local level, they're the ones who make sure those things stay in operation. Most of the services, because this is a weird way of thinking of it, that's what government is. It's a mechanism to provide services to the people. Well, all of that comes either from the state or the local level. But here's the problem. People are, by their tendencies as being a human being, naturally selfish, self-centered, greedy. They want what they want.
And that creates a problem. And the problem is capacity. Your book in chapter one, I think, has like 2 pages talking about the limitations of capacity. In order for the government to provide services, it needs money. And in order for the government to get money, because the government doesn't make money, the government takes it from us. Every person that works for the government, every service that's provided, every book that's in a school, every fire truck that's in a fire station, that's all paid for by the people. And the problem is stuff is wicked expensive. So where does the government get the money to do everything that the people want? Here we go. Here's some real life truism for you. In Sutton, our school committee, for the last several years, has spent way too much money. 85% of the school's budget goes to teachers' salaries. All they've been doing is giving them raises after raises after raises. A higher percentage than the town takes in. Additionally, as a result, next year, the school is claiming that they're going to have a budget deficit of $500,000. Well, the problem is the town, at least in Sutton, and I don't know if it's true in most towns, the town pays for the health care of all of the teachers and the people that work in the schools. So in addition to the fact that the schools consume nearly 59% of the town's budget, in addition to that, we also pay their health care. And health care prices, because of Obamacare and Romney Care, where our government basically tells insurance companies what they have to provide for everybody, and if people can't afford it, they get it free, which means those people who do pay have to pay more. The insurance companies that we use for the town is telling us insurance prices are going to go up nearly 20%. So the school has spent too much money. Insurance is going through the roof. Oh, and the town approved the purchase of a new fire truck. The initial estimate for the truck was $1 million. Well, when the chief went out and put the truck out to bid, it came back at $1.8 million. So the school is spending too much money. Healthcare is through the roof, and now we're trying to get a piece of apparatus that the voters voted for to save lives, and it's nearly twice as much. If you put that together, that's nearly $2 million in monies. Well, you know how much the town takes in what's called new growth? The amount of money that's allowed, that we're allowed to increase our property taxes? About $600,000. When you put it all together, that means we got a shortfall of about $1.5 million. Where are we going to get the money from? My government, my select board, we don't have a money tree out back. We can't grow the monies. So we're going to have to do one of two things. We're going to have to cut services that the people want, or we're going to have to increase taxes. Okay. What happens if we cut services? Well, that means we'll probably have to lay off teachers. I mean, it's fine. Our school population is dwindling anyways. And I've heard that there are some schools at the high school that's only 4 kids in a class. So there's definitely room to cut there. But the problem is when you talk about cutting schools, all the parents freak out and lose their mind because everything's about the children somehow. And so we got a group of parents that are already pushing for an override. Raise the taxes. Well, if we raise the taxes, the average population in Sutton right now is about 58, 59. Which means we have more people that are retired living in town on fixed incomes that have kids in schools. So if we raise money to help out the 13% of households whose kids are in the schools, we're going to impact 40% of the residents who are retired and living on fixed incomes. And I've talked to seniors in our community. When times get tough, they make decisions like maybe not buying the medication that they need, not paying for their prescriptions, not paying their utility bills. I had a veteran in town who was so broke 1 month, he chose not to get heating oil because he had other bills to pay, and it got so cold, his pipes froze in his house. I also talked to another senior 1 year that they said sometimes things are so bad, they get the cheapest canned, if you can call it, food possible. And yes, they once alluded to there was 1 week so bad they actually had to get cat food because cat food was on sale. So what do? Do we bend over backwards to help out the young families that are still working because they want their kids to get educated? Or do we help the seniors out who have been contributing for years and years and years? And again, there's no right and there's no wrong. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but these are the choices that we have to make. Because at the end of the day, there's only so much money, and we cannot do deficit spending. We can't have a deficit. We can't take out a credit card. It's not allowed. It's against the law in Massachusetts. So needless to say, I may be cranky in the coming weeks because the buck is going to stop with me and my board. We're going to have to make choices that are going to get people very pissed off at us, and I'm okay with that.
All right. So capacity. Capacity. In your book, somewhere in chapter one, it's defined as straightforward. The government's ability to respond effectively to change, to make decisions efficiently and responsively, and to manage conflict. Everything I just talked about in that real life example. Real life example. To respond effectively to change, to make decisions efficiently and responsively, and to manage conflict.
Because I can tell you, I went to a meeting on Monday night at the school dealing with the firefighter issue, and there were a lot of people pissed off. And on this coming Monday night, the school is having their budget hearing, and I'm sure they're going to pack it with people who are pissed off. I'm just glad I'm not up for re-election this year, because it's going to be a tough one.
All right. Now, what's the difference?
Well, unlike Sutton, who can't run a budget deficit, Massachusetts as a state can, to a degree. They can't go crazy. They have to be able to show in their projections that they will eventually make the money up. So basically, they can go into debt this year so long as it's covered next year. But national, down in D.C., they just spend and spend and spend and spend. Have any of you ever looked at the U.S. debt clock? It's something that's been online for a whole bunch of years. And it shows you literally what the current level of the debt of the United States is. The last time I looked at it, it was about, what, 35 trillion? Oh, it's at 38 trillion now. Awesome. $38 trillion. That means our government, over the last years, several years, it didn't just happen, it's been ongoing, has spent more money every single year than it makes. But it's allowed to do that. But here's the problem. It's like you going out and getting a credit card, maxing it out, And then you go out and get another credit card to transfer that debt so you can get like the zero interest for 6 months. But then the moment you clear up that, you still got to pay the debt. Oh, but then suddenly you go run out that other credit card again. But then you try again another. It's like the things that people do. And I get it. There are some emergency circumstances. Life is not easy. Sometimes unintentionally people get themselves into debt. But it's very difficult to dig yourself out. Well, if anything ever happens at the United States government level, when suddenly they can't get any more loans, they're going to jack the crap out of our taxes. Because it's our debt. And here's the most true statement I can make you. What government is spending now for you, your great, 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 great grandkids will be paying for it.
So, what can DC do? Well, they can just do whatever they want. So, for example, the president proposed increasing military spending by 50%. So, under the previous spending levels, the United States would commit $1 trillion to military spending. Well, President Trump proposed spending $1.5 trillion. Where's that money going to go from? And I agree with military spending. I think that's the only thing D.C. should be spending money on. Planes, tanks, bombs, oh, and highways. But where are they going to get the money from? You know?
Don't know.
Now, ironically, in Massachusetts government has put itself proportionally in a worse hole because our state constitution is relatively easy to amend. So over the decades and centuries since our constitution was ratified, it's been amended 124 times. And a lot of those amendments have created basically entitlement programs that the state's obligated to pay for. And they've passed laws creating more entitlement programs. You are the beneficiaries of an entitlement program. How much are you paying to be in my class right now? Yeah, you're paying nothing. You're paying nothing. That doesn't mean the shit's free. Someone's going to pay for the lights. Someone's going to pay for the technology. Someone's going to pay for the desks. Someone's going to pay for the water. Someone's going to pay my salary. Who's paying for it? I am. Because I'm a taxpayer. And if you have a job, you are. Is it worth it? Don't know. Don't know. This is something new. But I'll tell you one thing, because they're giving you free education, everyone's taxes are going to have to go up. Or government's going to have to cut other programs. So I'll tell you this. You better take advantage of this and work your tail off and get A's. Because if not, you're wasting money that was earned through people's working their butts off to take care of their family. You are literally taking money off of their table. So you got to work hard, get a good job so you can pay it forward. Because if you don't, that's just selfish. Now, can Massachusetts change it? Oh yeah, absolutely. They could. Because one of the interesting things is, I think this is the first year they've done it. Last semester, the grades plummeted. Because they've taken away the incentive for students to work. Because back not too long ago, like 3 years ago, students came to college and whether they got an A or an F, they still had to pay no matter what. But will Massachusetts change? Don't know.
I don't control the process. All government spending, all government programs are created
through my favorite word, politics.
Politics.
Everything that government provides is the result of politics. This involves people having their opinions and debating and arguing and voting and sending angry letters to elected officials. Everything that's involved in getting what you want. Politics are fun.
I love politics. I especially love politics when we have family gatherings around holidays. Because my brother-in-law is the ideological opposite of me. And we argue about everything. And that's okay. Because guess what politics is? Your politics is nothing more than your opinion. And you are entitled to have your opinion. But keep in mind, your opinion is not fact. It's not true. It's just your opinion. It's your beliefs. The beliefs that you gain through your experiences. It may be good for you, but your politics, if enacted, could impact the lives of other people. Here's a good example.
Back when I was a young man, back before the advent of electricity, when I went into the hallowed halls of academia and I attended college, we used to be able to smoke in the buildings, any building on campus.
They had the little ashtrays set up on the hall. And some teachers, professors, let you smoke in the classroom. Some did not. Well, while I was in college, there was a bunch of activists that, I don't like the smell of smoke, and started politicking. They campaigned. They raised money. They put ads on TV. They made donations to certain politicians while calling out others. They politicked. And as a result of that campaign, Massachusetts passed a law that prohibited smoking in government buildings. Well, I attended the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. Let me tell you this much. When I had to have my butts, because I started smoking when I was 12. When I had to go outside and have a cigarette, it was awful. I felt like a second-class citizen. Because I had as much rights as everybody else. And of course, the best part was, is you'd see most of the class outside before class smoking. And I had one of my favorite professors, he used to bum cigarettes off me all the time because I smoked the same thing he did. And he used to piss me off. And he didn't give me extra points either. Really annoyed me. But you had this, like, suddenly you had these pariahs. Again, second-class citizens. That were almost treated like lepers. They were banished. Because some people didn't like what they were doing. Well, that campaign continued. Soon, you were no longer, this was around 2000-ish or so after I was out of school, you were no longer allowed to smoke in private places, not just government buildings. Like, you couldn't smoke in bars anymore. You couldn't smoke in restaurants. Back in the day, restaurants used to have smoking section, non-smoke. I remember when you could smoke on airplanes. Now suddenly, no, you can't smoke in a business. What if the business owner wants to allow smoking? Too bad. Government says no. And then the politics continued. Now, smokers are not even treated like lepers. Lepers get better treatment. Smokers are banished from campus. They have to smoke out on the sidewalks. And yes, you're not supposed to vape either on campus. Not allowed. Why? Because some people said so. They won the political debate. Am I happy about it? Actually, at this point, I don't care because I quit back in 2005. Because for me, it's when Massachusetts added extra taxes and packs of cigarettes went up to $5. I wasn't giving all that extra money to the state. Fuck them. So I quit. I quit on principle. Do I miss it? Every single day. That is what it is. But did I do that because of what the politicians were doing? No, I had other interests. But I, interestingly enough, the moment I finally got out of my system, I kind of saying, yeah, it's probably a good thing that the room, you know how like if you go into someone's house who smokes, and like you can kind of like smell it, it just sounds gross and musty? Yeah, okay, so maybe it's a good thing that the classrooms don't smell like that. But, political debate. Some people wanted this, some people wanted that. In the end, the minority lost, the majority won. And that's the way politics are. Anything that happens in our country is that way. If a group is organized, mobilized, put pressure, they can win political debates. Now, the politics in our country are unique. They are also different than the politics in our country at any other point in time in our history. Because politics arise from what's going on in the culture.
So it changes based on the time, the place, in manner, what's going on in the country?
Your politics are ultimately
your beliefs, your values, your attitudes. They're not unique,
but rather they've been imprinted upon you based on the experiences that you've had in your lifetime. That's in part where you hear those things. Oh, the millennials or the Generation Y or whatever you guys are called. You know, you're so different than, you know, the baby boomers or Gen X. Well, because we grew up in different times. There were different things going on. Now, granted, deep down inside, I like to think that my times were the best. Gen X rules. You know, all you young people. But the funny thing is the baby boomers said that about my generation. And the greatest generation said that about my... I remember, I started working when I was 8. I got a paper route. And I remember one day I was delivering a paper. And I can't remember the guy's name. He was an old timer. He definitely was a World War II veteran. And at the time, it was very popular that they had hats that were being sold. It was the trend. And they were like painter's hats, so not like a ball cap, just like a kind of like a painter's hat. And they had tails on the back, like little flaps, and they were imprinted with like Japanese flags and characters. When I showed up to the, I was so proud, because I was came from a single parent, poor household. So I didn't get a paper route because I wanted to work. Well, you know, I wanted money. Because mom had no money for me. So if I wanted anything, actually I'd go work and earn the money and buy it myself. So the hat was the result of my efforts. And I was proud. And I showed up at the guy's house. And he called me a son of a bitch and Jap lover or something like that. And he like slammed the door in my face. Freaked me out. Here I am thinking I'm cool. And I offended some guy who probably lost his buddies fighting in the Pacific War. No idea. Interestingly enough, that experience shaped my politics. And I realized that there are men who voluntarily sign up to die so that way you all can be in school. And it's the veterans who deserve the utmost respect. So I never wore the hat again. It's probably still in my closet in my mother's house. Well, think about the stuff that you've experienced in your life. Were you alive when 9/11 occurred? Okay, so one was with me. Well, 9/11 changed the crap out of our country. You used to be able to, for instance, the best example I could give you is like airports. You used to be able to just go through a metal detector. If you had a loved one that was going on a flight, you could go all the way to the gate with them and see them off. Or if they were coming in, you could go all the way to the gate and greet them the moment they got off the plane. Now you're practically getting a full body cavity search just to go through security. And you're not allowed to go through security unless you have a provable ticket. And heck, if you go to some airports, you're not even allowed to wait outside while your loved one is getting their bag and coming out, because the police will come and get you out because they're afraid of bombs going off in front of the airport. I mean, just changed everything. Government also passed a whole bunch of regulations. The most significant was the Patriot Act. You realize if you have an electronic device, that the government has the ability to watch everything you're doing. They can turn your cameras on if they want to. They can go through your emails. They can go through your browsing history. They can look at all your little DMs. It's all legal. That was a reaction to 9/11. Well, let's think of stuff that's impacting you. Oh, the COVIDs. Remember the COVIDs? I saw so many kids that were actually traumatized by the COVIDs because the government was coming out saying, if you don't wear a mask and do the 6-foot separation and get like shot after shot after shot after shot, and you go near your grandmother, you're going to kill them. It was awful. That was the closest thing that we ever came to having a Nazi-style regime in our country. And what was even more terrifying for me, because I didn't believe anything they were saying, because I knew it was all politics, was I saw how many people bent the knee. They were so traumatized, they believed everything that the government said. They were traumatized by it. Do you want to know what the greatest thing I used to do? My wife hates me. She still does. But I don't care. It's just how I've been. I refused to wear a mask in public. So I would go into the grocery store, and I would intentionally go up the aisle that they had marked down, just so I could look in the eyes of the people. And there would be people like, every now and then they would like turn around and go the other way. They were so freaked out about it. So politics cause people to just lose all capacity for reason. Because here's an example of politics. Every time there's ever been any type of pandemic, the true science has said the best thing you can do is get exposed to it to allow your body to build up natural immunity. Not to remain isolated, because if you remain isolated and you're never exposed to it and you get something, it will be worse for you. But they disregarded all hundreds of years of medical advancements because of politics. It was all geared toward making sure Donald Trump lost the presidential election.
It was such a bizarre time to live in. It was so bizarre.
But that's politics. So what has been the legacy? Well, you guys lost out on probably 2 years of high school education because I know everything was shut down. Actually, no. You guys might have been in middle school. You still see people when you drive that wear the masks when they're in their cars by themselves, or they're out in public. You know, they've just been impacted by this. And again, I'm not saying they're right, they're wrong, but their world perception has been shaped by the times in which they lived. Some people can handle trauma. Some people can't.
But now you multiply that by 350 million people.
And you got different voices all the time. And everyone believes they're right. And they want to make sure that government does what they think is right.
And that's what makes politics so fun. Because it's just people passionately speaking about their opinions.
And here's the other interesting thing. My generation, generally, in terms of political ideology, if I'm going to pigeonhole all of us who were born from like 1970 up to 1980, we generally tend to be libertarians. We tend to be like, live and let live. We don't really care. Just leave us alone. Your generation tends to be way more left of center, ideologically, on many topics than my generation. And of course, the irony was is that my parents' generation, way more left of center than our generation. Maybe not as left of center as your generation, but the baby boomers, they're pretty far out there. Unlike their parents, who were way more right-wing than any of the generation we had before. Why? Let me think. The greatest generation had to live through the Great Depression and World War II. The baby boomers, they grew up in one of the most peaceful, economic, prosperous times, the 1950s. They had it so dad made so much money, mom did not have to work. They had the advent of television, they had the advent of plastic toys. Everything was given to them for the first time in history. And then Vietnam happened. So they grew up kind of spoiled, and then they had Vietnam, which was just controversial. Well, my generation grew up a counterculture to theirs. We also grew up in the age of Reagan. So every single generation, their political views are linked on what's going on in the times in which they develop. Religion also plays a role. Our politics, generally in the United States, tend to be more conservative than other places in the world, particularly Europe, because Europe, for the most part, has crushed their Christian roots that have developed from 2,000 years of Judeo-Christian tradition. They've gone borderline communist, atheistic. Where in our country, the majority of people, even though it doesn't seem like it in Massachusetts, the majority of people in America are more traditionally grounded in Christian. Right wing, conservative.
Just because religion in our country is the only country on earth where it's protected by the Constitution itself. You have the right to worship whatever religion you want, and government can't interfere. Government can't punish you. So if you want to be a Lutheran, you can be a Lutheran. If you want to be Jewish, you can be Jewish. If you want to be a Muslim, you can be a Muslim. Heck, if you want to be Wiccan and dance around the trees, you can be a Wiccan. Whatever you want to be. Not true other places on earth. Like, if you grew up in Saudi Arabia,
good luck trying to be Jewish. Heck, good luck trying to be gay.
So what's the impact? Well, political culture is like our unwritten constitution.
Generally speaking, most people, because of what's going on in their times and widely held values, basically believe, you know, government should do those things that accommodate the views of the majority of the people.
Questions? Now, here's the thing. In many countries, when there's a conflict of politics, it results in violence and bloodshed. We've
seen it in our country once. And we've come close. Well, not now. We've never been close as we were when the Civil War happened. But, you know, there's people out there say, oh, we're on the verge of Civil War. That's not true. You got, like, a few thousand activists that are paid to go and make noise on TV. The vast majority of people, like I told you, they just want to go do their jobs. Don't, like, block my traffic. Let me earn my paycheck so I can take care of my family. Not like in the 1850s, like when people rushed to Kansas to determine whether it was going to be a free or slave state, and an open war broke out. Thousands of people killed themselves over whether or not people had a right to own property. But here's the thing. Political culture does not guarantee political behavior. The politics, widely accepted by the majority, doesn't necessarily mean they're always going to be politically active. Again, I'll go back to the example I used last class. I get people that come up to me when I go to the dump, or the gas station, or the little sandwich shop in town, and they're angry about stuff because of their politics. Why isn't the town doing what I want you to do? And like I told you, at some point I'll ask them, did you vote? No. Did you go to town meeting? No. So here's the other interesting thing. Just because people have politics, they don't always act on it. Or, even more bizarrely, because we have so much freedom in our country, sometimes people act in a political manner that's actually counter to what they want. So, maybe they want lower taxes so they can keep more money in their pockets, but they'll go and vote for a new school that's going to cause property taxes to go up $1,000 per household per quarter. They're barely getting by, but they don't actually live the lifestyle according to their political beliefs. And here's the thing, there's no requirement that you do so. For me, I make decisions based on every single issue that comes before us. Sometimes, you know, in my capacity as being a selectman, I've actually been accused of being a Democrat. Sometimes I've been accused of being a Republican, which I am enrolled. But it's just bizarre. But what I do is I don't basically make my decisions based on what party I'm in. I based on whatever's the issue at hand. Is there something that's good for the common good that's going to help out most people? Then I'm for it. For instance, I supported an override to build two new schools in my town, even though I hate paying taxes. I also supported an override to build a new police station, even though I hate paying more taxes. But I voted against the library. Which is weird, because I'm a college professor, and you'd think I'd love, you know, access to books. But the problem is that the cost of the library made no sense, because the library was going to cost more than the police station. And the police station we needed, because our police station in Sutton was once an addition that was a former trailer that they kind of added to the building, like a mobile office, mobile wing. And it was only supposed to be there for 5 years, but it was there for 40. And it also did not have room for our two female police officers to change. They had to change in a converted closet. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, there's a civil rights lawsuit waiting to happen. And you couldn't isolate the jail cells. So if you had, say, a minor that was locked up in one cell and you had a crazy sex-praying adult in the next, yeah, they had this plexiglass. He couldn't, like, reach his hand around. But that sex predator could see the moment the kid came out of the jail cell. Or vice versa. There was, like, no privacy. So did I want my taxes to go up to build a new building? No. But at the same time, I know if we didn't do something about it, the town was going to get sued, and it would cost us way more. The library, on the other hand, we have a library. For the amount of people that use it, what we have is good enough. So again, cost-benefit analysis. one instance I'm for more spending, even though I don't want to spend more, and some I'm against. But it depends upon the issue.
That's what most people are.
But at its core, yeah,
we are a Christian nation. Because our values in all of Western civilization have come to us going all the way back to the stories that would give rise to the Old Testament. The ancient Hebrews and their experience, which would give rise to the Christians, which would be the official language, religion of Rome, beginning in the 3rd century. It was entrenched in Europe. Now, I'm not saying the literal words that are in the Bible. That's not what we refer to when we talk about the Judeo-Christian tradition.
When this is used, what it's meant to basically describe are basically the inherent values that come out of these faiths.
So, for instance, unlike other religions on earth, the Jewish faith and the Christian faith is based on individualism. It's based upon you and your relation to a higher power and the consequences that you are going to have on your journey through life. Are you going to live according to the moral code? All of the thou shalls and the thou shall nots? Because you want to get to heaven? Or do you not care? Well, here's the funny thing. In only Judeo-Christian nations, you actually have a right not to believe. You have a right not to believe. If you don't want to. Because ultimately, if the Christians are right and the atheists are wrong, the Christians are going to go up and the atheists are going to go down. But if the atheists are right and the Christians are wrong, then there's going to be nothing. But only in Judeo-Christian countries has that type of individualism been allowed. Try not being a Muslim in Saudi Arabia or Iran. Try it. Go ahead. Get on an airplane. See if you can get to those countries and try living the lifestyle that you live here in those countries. I can guarantee you, chances are it's going to result in someone killing you. Because in Islam, if you are not a fully accepted member of the faith, Quran allows for things like honor killings. You'll be judged an apostate. If you were a Muslim and suddenly decided you want to be an atheist, and anyone in your family has a right to kill you, no punishment. You'll actually get rewarded by Allah in the afterlife. Places like Asia, China. Huh. Good luck being faithful in China. Have any of you ever heard of the Uyghurs? Uyghurs are actually, ironically, Muslim Chinese that lived on the western provinces. Well, the communist regime decided they didn't like these Muslim Uyghurs because they were not embracing communism. So they went and rounded them all up and put them in labor camps, concentration camps. And now they're engaged in slave labor for the state.
In our country, we also accept the law. And that the law is in place
to kind of keep the good people safe from the bad people. The people that would want to do the good people harm.
Not so in other countries. Again, I think I mentioned the example. One of the most horrifying things that I learned when I was your age. One of my buddies from college decided he was going to go and engage in teaching English down in Brazil. He went into a bar, said something that insulted a cop. Cop pulled out a gun and put a round right in his forehead.
The cop, no charges.
No charges.
Well, what do you think would happen to a cop in our country if they did that? I can tell you, they would be arrested. They would lose their job. They would lose all of their benefits. Their name would be all over the news. They would end up in a prison somewhere, and chances are one of the prisoners would make their lives shorter than we'll say they were entitled to naturally. But at least justice would occur.
Oh, here's another thing. You are encouraged but not required to help out your neighbors. Be a good person. You know, do unto to others as you would have done to you. If you look at the amount of money that people in our country give to charities, it's 5 times higher than any other country on earth. Even in Islamic countries where they're required to give a portion of their wages to help out the poor and needy within their society. Americans are the most generous people on earth. Case in point, we had a bunch of illegals that were dumped in Sutton and put in the Red Roof Inn on 146. They literally were dumped. The Biden administration picked them up in Mexico. They were a bunch of people from Haiti and I don't remember what other country they came from. They literally picked them up in Mexico, flew them to Logan Airport, got them off the plane, put them in cabs, dropped them off at the Red Roof on 146. Town government was not notified. So we had, it was 120 people that were just dumped off on Friday afternoon. We didn't find out about it until Monday. Well, here's the thing. Our town does not have illegal alien relief fund. We don't have no resources to help out 120 people. We do have a food bank that poor people in town are able to get access. And I use the phrase poor because we do check their finances. We're not just going to let anyone who's too lazy to go to Walmart go in and hit our food bank. No, we actually verify that they're in need. So they're vetted. Well, our town nurse found out about it. Word got to our board, so we authorized it. And we literally wiped out the food bank. So we gave to these illegals all of the food that we had built up to help out the 200 families in our town that use our food bank. And then we put the word out on social media, and before you know it, truckloads of clothes and toys for children and food all started showing up. And then we put out the word that the food pantry was empty. And before you know it, cars and trucks and families started going down the food pantry with bags full of food. We took care of our own and took care of another 110 people on top of it. Because we are a generous town. You don't get that anywhere else on earth. At least not in places where there's not Christianity. Generally speaking, we also accept the legitimacy of the law. Because again, we know that there are consequences for our actions. If you sin, you go to hell. But we also know if you break the law, there's going to be punishment. So unlike in China, where they require people who live in cities to have apps on their phones so government can track all their behavior to make sure they don't commit any crimes, in our country, we don't need to do that. Because most people don't commit crimes. We could. But we just don't, because we respect the law. We respect our society, and we respect our neighbors. This one's always in flux, and I know right now this is probably at the lowest point, at least in my lifetime, just because our government in particular and all people in authority have become so corrupt, and it's been exposed by the new media. The lies that they tell us every single day. Oh, case in point, did any of you watch the State of the State speech by our governor? She was all excited, claiming that she's going to cut electricity costs
for all people in Massachusetts. The next day, National Grid said, no, 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 that's just a deferment. So they're going to cut everyone's electrical bill by, I think, $50 a month for 2 months. And then guess what's going to happen 3 months down the road? You're going to pay for those 2 months that you did not have to pay. Oh, and she claimed, the governor, that it's the state taking care of people. No, what she did was she took that money that supposedly we're all going to save out of the portion of our electric bill that we're forced to contribute for all of these boondoggle green energy projects. She made herself look like a savior, but she lied to our face. Well, when you have politicians lying, and then suddenly the truth comes out, people have a tendency to sit back and be like, yeah, I don't really think they're telling the truth this time around. I'll say this much, God forbid, I hope we never have another pandemic, at least not in the next 10, 20 years, because our government screwed it up so much that first time, I think most people, even if it is the truth, will not believe it. Because what is the truth? Don't know anymore.
Our schools are bad. Our courts are bad. Our media is bad. Our politicians are bad. I hope all of those people have a coming to God moment and just start acting the right way. Because our society kind of depends on trust.
Oh, here's another Christian-like idea. We generally don't like the idea of war or violence.
Why? Well, because whenever there's a war,
I know there's that lie out there that was spread by some of the radical activists back going back to the Vietnam era, that war is good for business. Actually, that's not true. War is not good for business. Because you never have enough money to actually pay for the war. Which means the government has to make debt. Case in point, when George W. Bush became president of the United States, our debt was around $2 trillion. Then 9/11 happened, and then the war on terror happened. When George W. Bush left office in 2009, we were at $8 trillion in debt. And then Obama came in, and he continued the war on terrorism, which added more debt. But was the fight justified? I remember what it was like on September 12th, 2001. I had buddies that had served in the 90s that went back and re-enlisted. You had patriotism. You had red, white, and blue flags everywhere. Why? Because someone fucked with us. And we're going to go get them. So the war was justified. We didn't attack them. They attacked us. Same thing in World War II. Same thing in World War I. Korea, Vietnam, not quite so clear. Politically, the nation was really divided in Korea and in Vietnam. Originally, we were all gung-ho, but by the end of the war, the vast majority of people were against it. But generally speaking, we don't like being aggressors. Here's the other thing. We always hope that it's going to be better. We believe that tomorrow is a new day. As bad as things are now, tomorrow could be a little better. Although actually it's not true, because tomorrow it's going to be colder than it is today. Tomorrow's going to be like one of the coldest days like in 100 years, supposedly. Wind chill, negative 30. But you know something? We live in New England, and we have seasons. So as bad as it is now, give it a couple of weeks.
Hope and conviction. Questions?
what happens when the pendulum goes too far? Not good. Not good.
A mostly peaceful protest in Minneapolis after George Floyd. That incident. The mobs that were arguing for Black Lives Matter burned down entire areas of that city. Destroyed something like 120 small businesses. The overwhelming majority owned by African Americans and other ethnic minorities. Why? Because the protesters were mad. And that's an interesting story as well. There was actually a very interesting documentary that exposed what actually took place when George Floyd, that incident occurred. And it wasn't exactly what the media portrayed. But again, you can do all that research on your own. But here's the thing. What was put on the TV was enough to cause people to lose their minds and to lash out and engage in violence. And the worst part is there were some politicians that allowed it to occur. But here's an interesting thing. Do you remember hearing about Chopped or Chaz? What happened in, was it Portland? I think it was Portland. Was it Seattle? A bunch of Black Lives Matter protesters took over like the central part of the city and made it like a free government zone. Well, somehow there was an innocent person that got caught up in it and was killed by those quote-unquote peaceful protesters. His family sued the city for negligence. Because the job of the government is to stop riots, not allow riots. They sued, and they got $50 million. What do you think is going to happen in Minneapolis? Because you had that nurse guy, and then Good. They both died in protests. Well, here's the thing. Why were they there? Well, because the city encouraged people to go out and interfere with a federal operation, which is legal. So guess what the nurse and Good there, their families have a legitimate claim, and I'm a lawyer, they have a legitimate claim against the city. And I hope they sue him for millions of dollars. Because the mayor of Minneapolis told the police to go nowhere near the operations. Allow the ICE to go in by themselves. Not to keep people back. I might pass the bar in Minnesota just to go out and represent them. Because that's going to be a good payday. But that's the thing. People get inflamed and they don't think about the consequences. Because I'll tell you. Read an American history book. Learn about what led up to this. This war was avoidable. But people get so entrenched in their politics that they refuse to try to make a compromise. Shots were fired, and 700 million men and a few women lost their lives.
It's insane. So actually, I think this was in Seattle, this one. This was during the 1960s. This was all, I think this was
from Chicago, if I remember correctly. This was when all the hippies went out and protested the Democrat convention in Chicago.
Yeah, that looks like it's from 1968.
Yeah, I think that's what that was.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm probably going to be discussing that in one of my other classes. 60s
yeah.
In America.
Yeah, it's crazy violent times. But what happened is, and again, I'm not saying one side was right, one side or wrong. One side just got so outraged that it's like a pendulum. So to counter the craziness of one side, you get an equal and opposite reaction, which results in sometimes an over-response, and people get harmed.
It is natural. It is human. Fortunately, in our country,
the majority of people, and again, it's not all, I know, and if you pay attention to the polls, there are some issues that are like 80-20 issues, where like 80% of the people are in favor of it. Like voter ID. I was reading a news story that they, a couple of polling places did a poll. And apparently like 80% of Americans, 80% of Republicans, 80% of Democrats, 80% of Latinos, 80% of blacks, 80% of people think having an ID is a good thing when you go in to vote.
This is similar. These are the beliefs that the vast majority of people hold. Again, maybe they're a little to the left. Maybe they're a little to the right.
One of the biggest things we accept is this concept. What Thomas Jefferson said. You, because you are here, are entitled to live your life as you want. To have liberty. God-given freedom. To be who you want to be, to live where you want to live, to work where you want to work, to go where you want to go. Because that's the pursuit of happiness. The vast majority of Americans believe this is unalienable. What does unalienable mean? It means it can't be taken away. Government should leave us alone.
Let us be. Why?
It's about me. It's about you. At least in your mind.
We all believe that we are entitled to certain liberties. It's probably the most powerful value in our society, and has always been. That's why the war of independence was fought.
Because they believed that the British government, well, our government, was interfering in the lives of the colonists too much. So we basically said, go away. We also acknowledge other people. We may disagree. And by the way, if we disagree, that doesn't mean we don't believe the other person has a right to exist and should be died, like arrested and killed. We just disagree, and that's okay. You should have respect for everybody, whether you agree with them or not. Why? Because they have the same rights as you do. And I'll give you my most extreme example that I can give you, case in point. My personal core, my religion, my ethics, my morality is based upon one simple truism. We need to implement a genocide of bananas. Bananas are vile. They are disgusting. They smell. They taste like, well, bananas. They're just gross and mushy. They're awful. No, they need to be destroyed. At least in my opinion. But you like bananas?
Yeah, with peanut butter.
Fine, you can have your bananas with peanut butter. But do I have to eat the bananas? No, I don't.
That's America, baby.
I respect this young woman who attends class for the first time today enough to say if she wants to have bananas in her peanut butter sandwiches for lunch, she can have it. But she doesn't have a right to force it on me.
Oh!
And again, this is really hard because it's been one of the most difficult aspects of modern society that I've seen, particularly for the younger people, is how much politics has oozed into everything. Politics is in sports now. Politics is in every single TV show, in movie, in comics, in cartoon. You know, the stuff that we used to use for escapism. Politics is just in it, and it's awful. Why do I say that? Well, because when I was coming of age, my generation was the first generation to embrace completely the words of Martin Luther King Jr. That we as human beings coexisting on this earth should not judge people based on how they look. But rather we should make our judgment based on the content of their character. To put it another way, if you're a good person, I don't care what you look like, I love you. But if you're an asshole, don't be surprised if I don't want to talk to you. And it doesn't matter what you look like. It's the same truism, I think, for everybody. The problem is today, with the whole DEI and all that other stuff, we've gone away from that, and we actually now allow racism, sexism, to be in our society. But I'm hoping the pendulum goes back. Because at the end of the day, you should be able to do whatever you want based on your skills. Not based on what you look like, not based on what you believe, but what you can do. If you're qualified for a job, you should be able to get that job and do it to the best of your ability. And it doesn't matter who you are. Rich, poor, white, black, brown, somewhere in between. From New York, even if you come from New York, that's fine. You should be able to pursue your happiness to the extent in which you engage in. Oh, I'm almost out of time, so I'll give you the last two clips. The last big part of the core, and these are the four core beliefs that make up this popular consent. Most people basically can accept that if more people are for something, okay, fine. If that's what most people want. But it's so long as it's what the people want. So when gay marriage was created in our state through our state court system, there was a lot of people that had, they were very upset about it. Because this was four unelected people sitting in our high court that basically decided that our constitution that was written by John Adams somehow gave the right to gay marriage. There were people basically saying, no, we should vote on it. We should allow the people to have a say. But we were denied that. Our legislature didn't give the people the right to do it. But what happened was, well, the majority of people in our state were angry about it. As time went on, more and more people sat back and kind of took the attitude that I have. Heck, if gay people want to be married, they're entitled to be as miserable as I am in my marriage. It's their right to be. Now, why? Because that's what most of the people accept. So we're good with it. And last but not least, I've talked about this a lot. The conflict of values. What you want may conflict with what I want. And again, if you listen to the politicians on TV, this is very dangerous. Because we actually have we had a member of Congress basically saying it would be justified for people to shoot police officers. He said that in a hearing yesterday. Jerry Nadler from New York. So we also got to remember we got to take a step back on our politics. All right?
Thank you. I have to catch my butt.
No, it's all right. I'm done. Sorry for keeping you a couple minutes late. Topics. Topics for your papers, topics for your papers, topics for your papers.
Can I tell you why I'm
Well, yeah, you can tell me now.
I went to the healthcare. I don't know if somebody knows.
Healthcare?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. Because Massachusetts pretty much regulates healthcare.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you should be able to get a lot of information there. What aspect?
I think I was just looking at, like, how, like, laws are changing, like, the affordability
part of it. Okay. And if for some reason you can't quite narrow it down, as long as you stay within that bubble, you can shift it. And you know if you change your mind, just let me know. Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you.
Yep.